Welcome to the Mental Coaching Podcast, sponsored by the National High School Basketball Coaches Association. I am your host, Coach Jenny Hopkins. And in this podcast, we're going to look at mental coaching and explore the mental side of the game with coaches from coast to coast and get all kinds of input on how we can separate between good and great and the best, which oftentimes comes down to the mental side of the game. We are going to address mental preparation, mental strategies, mental roadblocks such as fear of failure, perfectionism, performance anxiety, inconsistent confidence, success guilt, imposter syndrome. We're also going to look at strategies to try and help athletes and coaches with each one of those roadblocks. We're very excited to have as our very first guest on the podcast, Coach Mike Nabors from the University of Arkansas Women's Basketball Program. In 2017, the University of Arkansas hired Coach Mike Nabors to be their head women's basketball coach. After coaching at Colorado, Tulsa, Arkansas, Xavier, and Washington as an assistant, Coach Nabors made a name for himself as a head coach at the University of Washington. During his time with Washington, he elevated the program to new heights by taking them to the NCAA Final Four in 2016 and having two Sweet 16 appearance seasons. There he coached Kelsey Plum, the NCAA all-time career-leading scorer and number one WNBA draft pick. At Arkansas, his home state and alma mater, he has exploded the Lady Razorbacks to a national spotlight, beating teams such as UConn, Baylor, South Carolina, Texas A&M, and others. He has posted record seasons and continues to elevate their play. Coaching multiple WNBA players, Coach Nabors is a coach that is respected coast to coast, and in this episode, we will catch up with him on his stance on mental health and how we can assist athletes and coaches. Again, welcome to the podcast for mental coaching, sponsored by the National High School Basketball Coaches Association.
Welcome, Coach Mike Nabors, to the podcast. You know, Coach Nabors, we're bringing awareness to mental coaching and assisting coaches and athletes to better meet their hypothetical best, if you will. So welcome to the podcast.
Great to be on and a great topic. Happy to share some experiences and hopefully learn some stuff along the way.
Well, you know, first of all, I know that you're gearing up at the beginning of the season, so I'm going to right out the gate tell you how much I appreciate your time during this busy part of the season.
Not a problem. Happy to do it. And I think like most coaches, I think things kind of slow down in season. You know, you get on a routine a little bit and, you know, you're busy, but I at least you know what's coming and you got that schedule right in front of you. It's that off season when you don't have a game coming up. So I really like the rhythm of basketball. You know, I've said many times, stop trying to chase balance because you're never going to attain it. So I like the rhythm that we're in. I really like this time of the year.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's fantastic. I love that. All right. So we, as I said earlier, we're bringing some kind of light and generating continued conversation over the mental health of athletes. And, you know, I refer to it more as mental coaching. You know, it's, we want to recognize mental health issues, but that's not where it stops. We want to be able to try to help our athletes and coach them through this and navigate it. So first of all, I just would like to know just your general thoughts on the state of mental health right now of collegiate players.
Yeah. And I think you hit right off the bat there. I think reducing some of the stigma of the word mental issues, mental health, we all have it. We all have things, and I hate the word issue because there's such a negative connotation with it. So I'm proud that y'all use the word mental health because we all have it. So I do think with COVID coming out, we know we're 2 years post now, we're starting to deal with some of the things that I think we all dealt with. That's one of the very few times in our lifetime when we all kind of stood still. And I think every player that I've dealt with, every assistant coach, everybody on my staff from strength and conditioning to nutrition, you know, everybody went through that a different way. And I think we're now coming out of that. And I think it's never been more important that we acknowledge it, that we talk about it, and it's a part of what we practice. Not just as just as much as your transition offense and transition defense and ball screen defense, it's got to be, you got to have a folder for it. You know, I've got a folder over here to talk about it and make sure we check in on it every single day that we're together.
Yeah, it is. It's a skill. It is a skill that they need to work on. And as a sports counselor, you know, I've worked with athletes and teams, and there are a few main areas that kind of stand out as mental roadblocks, if you will. So it could be performance anxiety, fear of failure, perfectionism. There is a difference between those two. Inconsistent confidence, success guilt. But the one I'm seeing the most with collegiate athletes has been perfectionism. I mean, they give themselves little grace to make mistakes. And if they don't play flawless, they look at it as almost a reflection on their self-worth. And, I want to know, are you seeing this with some of your players or with even other collegiate athletes at your university?
No question. Yeah, all of the things that you mentioned, some kids have some kids have many. But everybody's got one of those things.
Yeah.
I have them. You know, I've got them. We were getting ready to have a scrimmage the other day, and I just got this feeling in my stomach. It's like it was test day. You're supposed to really look forward to the game. And instead, you get this knot in your stomach because you know you're going to be judged on social media and in the comments section by somebody that you probably don't even know and probably doesn't even know you either. But they're just out there looking to stir things up. So, no, it's more prevalent than ever because of the visibility of social media, kids' expectations that are set by themselves, by people around them, by rankings, by scholarship chasing, by awards, recognition, likes on all the various platforms. I mean, it is something that people chart. I know there are people that chart how many likes they get. And it just, it's one of those things that scares me as a father and it scares me as a coach. I don't claim to have any expertise, so I ask for help along the way from lots of people like you and others because if we don't have that on lock, it doesn't matter what offense we run or how we guard ball screens. If they don't feel good, they're not going to play good.
Right. I agree. And I think that's an excellent point. And whoever's charting the likes, stop that, please. Please stop that. That's not healthy. Not healthy.
Not healthy. Yeah, no. Not healthy.
And I do think a lot of the roots of the issues are social media, overwhelming expectations from, you know, parents and even coaches, and rightfully so. You want the best for them. You want to have high expectations. But I do think a lot of it is intrinsic. And I think a lot of them, there is this overwhelming need to compare themselves to others, not feel that you have the worth inside you, but what others think about you is how you're gauging your self-worth. And that's a dangerous place to be. And it's not healthy.
No, I've seen it. You've probably seen it on social media. There is good social media.
Yes.
I tell our kids all the time, there's stuff out there that can be good for you, but it is definitely the thief of joy. I didn't make that quote up. Somebody else put it on a post, but there's no question comparison. It can steal your joy and bring things into your life. Our brain is designed to protect itself. You know, I did a year-long study a few years ago about some things with the way our brains work, but we are still in that mode where it is made to protect ourselves. And when attacked, it goes into protection mode. And that can create some really dark places for people that judge themselves compared to others. And I don't think we did the collegiate students we didn't make it any easier by bringing NIL in, mm-hmm. the name, image, and likeness.
Right.
Because here I am sitting there saying to them, don't compare yourself and how many likes you're getting when their agent is telling them, well, you have to have name, image, and likeness to make money. You have to have a social media following. You have to have followers. You have to have interactions. You have to have likes. And I just think the two can reach a dangerous intersection if you don't talk about it. We've had a lot of success just by having moments when, and it doesn't have to be scheduled. It can be in the middle of a practice. It can be on an off day. It can be on the airplane. It can be in the hotel. It can be a lot of different places, but more coaches becoming more aware and not being afraid to ask for help. This is one of those areas. I mean, you may have had it, but my coaching classes, we didn't have any of this stuff.
Right.
This was not, it was not on the radar in the 90s. It wasn't a thing.
Right.
And if people aren't out reading the current books and listening to podcasts like this and others and TED Talks, and, you know, if you're just relying on your years of experience and what you were taught when you played, it's going to be really easy to do harm. I'm not even talking about doing good anymore. I'm talking about you can harm some kids with some styles of coaching that I still see happening when I go in gyms. And I know it's harmful.
Right.
We've got to do a better job of educating. I think it's just applaud you guys for making this podcast what it's going to be. And you're not going to change everybody, but man, if you can help one person, it's going to be a great thing.
Well, that's actually a perfect segue into my next question, because you said earlier that sometimes they go to a dark place. And if we don't teach them to navigate this, if we don't arm them with some of those coping strategies, you know, that they can definitely choose the wrong path. And so we want to make sure that we are arming them with these skills. We can't avoid some of these issues and these roadblocks, but we can teach them how to hurdle and go around them and develop those skills. So, you know, if I, you know, ask you, I already know the answer to this question, but if I asked you, if a student athlete came to you and says, you know, I'm struggling mentally, you know, you see that as a strength or a weakness? I mean, obviously, I know you're going to say strength.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
However, yeah. There are coaches out there that when you get in the most competitive mind, and I've been there as a coach, you know, you have someone come up there, they are not receptive. What would you say to those coaches that are not understanding how important it is that their reaction is extremely impactful?
Please get out of the game.
Yes.
You're making it hard on the rest of us. Go do something different. Time has passed you by. If you have not got the common sense to get help, you don't have to have the answers. Send them to somebody. Find somebody. They're out there. They're available. I've got friends that just dismiss the idea. Ah, we don't need that. They're just soft. They're just, please stop coaching. Please stop. Get out of this game. Go do something else. There's other professions that are just as that you can do that don't require dealing with human beings. And I get, you know, I've got people that will slam us because we pay too much attention to it. That's okay. Put all the publicity out there saying that we're going to take care of your kids mentally and physically. That's okay by me, but please get out of the game or get some help. Read a book. If you're too busy to read a book, listen to somebody read a book to you on a tape. If you're too busy to listen to a book on tape, get a podcast, get a TED Talk, but please get caught up. Times have changed. These kids, and it is a proven statistic, this generation of kids is way better than me as a Gen Xer. Every statistical category, class attendance, drinking age, voting records, teen pregnancy, every single category, they're better. They're more aware of the of humanism. They're more aware of every single aspect of life, but we dismiss them because they're different.
Right.
And until we learn how to communicate, they don't need you and I for information anymore. They can get that, like we're talking about, by reading a book, going to the internet, talking to their friends, getting in a Discord, which I didn't even know what a Discord was, but they get in these Discords and they don't need you and I for it. They need to know what to do with that information. And they need some support and they need protection as much as anything. Like, we have hopefully created a situation where, like you mentioned, if somebody comes forward, we had it. We've got a player setting this year out on a mental break. Anybody can Google her story, and she would be more than happy for you to Google and read about her, because she was a McDonald's All-American. She was a great player, started every game, but she was wise enough and had a good enough support system at home to say, I need a break. And not just a couple of days, I need a big break. So get help. If you're one of those people that are reluctant to change because you don't know what to do, it's show some vulnerability and say, I can't help you with this, but man, I know somebody that can, and I'm going to be here to support you. And you keep me in the loop, and you will learn things along the way. I am by no means an expert just because I've read 20 books on it or listened to 50 podcasts, but I'm way more informed than I was the 5 years ago, Mike Neighbors.
Right.
So I just encourage people to keep learning, ask questions, be vulnerable, but listen more than anything. Do not try to fix it. You don't have to investigate it. You don't have to do anything. Just be there. Listen. The more you listen, the more information you get, then you'll know who to call or what guides to give them. But you don't they're not looking. They're not coming to you for the answer.
Right.
They are coming to you to say, I need you to know this. If they've made that is brave.
It is
very brave to come to you. And if they immediately get some of the answers that you talked about, you're in danger of regretting it in the worst possible ways.
Yes.
And I have a written down in my book goal to never have a player that's committed suicide. And I don't have any control over that. But I want to do everything I can do. I don't have any goals about championships or rings or any wins, nothing. If I could have one thing, it would be that all of my players outlive me and none of them choose that path. Because it would have, I would always have a sense of guilt. And I want to make sure that we've done everything we can do to provide opportunity and resources for every single person, regardless of what their situation is. You know, have you come across the imposter syndrome?
Yes.
As you've been reading?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think that's the one we're dealing with most, Jenny. This imposter syndrome that kids have been told, well, you're the best player ever at this school, or the best player ever in this region, or the best player rankings wise. And then they meet somebody that's just as good. And all of a sudden, you're like, am I really all of those things people have been telling me? I was guilty of it. It happened to me my first year as a head coach. I was looking around that Pac-12 room, and there's Tara Vandiver sitting over there, and Charlie Turner Thorne and Lindsey Gottlieb, and looking around this going, wait a second, am I supposed to be in this room? What have I done to be in the same conversation and have the same vote that Tara Vandiver has on this next topic that we're voting on? So that's the one that scares me the most, because that's the majority of our kids at the collegiate level. Every one of them have been the best player at their school.
Right.
Most of them, if not all of them. And it's for sure recently. And they've not been in an environment. They've not been confronted. And you mentioned about clearing the path. You know, there's a lot of parents out there that clear the pathway. They're just out bulldozing all those obstacles rather than letting kids figure out how to maneuver them and get around them, like you said, over them, under, round, through, whatever. It's a dangerous intersection of time when if we don't provide these kids the proper support, our game can change.
It really can. And I love the word bravery you used, because it is. It's very courageous for them to come out and speak to a coach. And that's why they have to be so careful. So I love your advice to those coaches that are still hard-headed enough. You know, we are always, you know, preaching to be coachable, to be able to, you know, handle constructive criticism, be coachable. But these coaches, I just want to hold a mirror up to them and say, are you being coachable?
This book, I just held it up for you to see. You and I are Zooming right now, but Do Hard Things by Steve Magnus, I think is the best new book out there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great ones, and you have to read everything. You need to read Carol Dweck, and you need to read Covey, and you need to read Brian Levinson, Shift Your Mind. There's a lot of things, but the Do Hard Things, I think, is exactly what you're talking about when it speaks to a coach. we ask our players to do all these things all the time that are hard. What are you doing sitting at that desk, especially if you're in year 25, maybe like I am? I'm in year 25, you know, and you're like, what did I do that's hard today?
Right.
This is hard. This, learn this stuff, grow and get out of your comfort zone and adapt with these times, whether or not you're planning on coaching another 5 years or another five games. Mm-hmm. I just think those last 5 years of your life usually is what leaves your legacy, you know, and if you're sitting around doing the same thing you did in year one, times have changed.
Right.
World has changed. Society has changed. The way that kids think has changed. Doesn't make what we did wrong. It's just different.
Yes.
And the tools we're equipped with aren't there.
It doesn't matter if you relate to it or not. You don't have to relate to have, you know, some, a form of empathy and care about their well-being. And I, you know, I definitely implore all coaches to do exactly what you are saying. Educate yourself. You don't have to be the therapist, but you can be the vessel that gets them the guidance and help that they need.
In fact, don't try to be the therapist. You know, that's what I tell people all the time. Don't, just because you read a book doesn't make you the expert.
Right.
All I want to do is get them to the right person.
Right.
You know, and see, and I want to know the signs. Yes. That's the other thing that I wanted to study. I wanted to be able to see the things that maybe before somebody was reached that point of bravery to come tell you, you can see them. And you'll be shocked at how fast, if you want to learn something, you're going to learn something. Mm-hmm. And there's so many great things that I missed out on early in my career because all I was worried about was winning and losing so I could get a college job. You know, I was a high school coach, and in my brain, we had to win all these championships to be attracted to a college coach. That was wrong. Coach Blair wanted to see me working. He didn't care how many games we won. He never one time asked me how many games we won.
Yeah,
he saw me working. And to me, that's where I think sometimes we get caught up in the end all be all, the win loss record. I'm finishing a 5-year research project. I'm never going to get my master's or doctorate degree because I'm too lazy to take the classes. But I'm writing what would be a good master's thesis. I'm trying to find a different way for us to compare coaches, not wins and losses.
Right.
Because not all wins are created equal.
How do you measure impact?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. I don't know yet, but there's got to be a way to do it. With if all this stuff that I'm learning about artificial intelligence and that, you know, Zoom is watching us right now, you know, and watching, they're looking at stuff in your background and things in my background, and they're using that data. And it's a little scary, but I want to try to find a way for us to do that in the coaching world. So that the next generation of coaches aren't so hung up on wins and losses.
So true.
How do you measure the fact that I last week got 2 wedding invitations, a birth announcement, and just a thank you card from another player? How do you, where does that come in?
In your
I know
heart.
Where it comes into me personally, but it doesn't come in sometimes when an angry parent is yelling at a coach from the third row.
Right.
But where is that? Are those people to protect those coaches? That's what we've got to do. We've just got to change the perception of what sport is. Wins and losses always going to be important. Don't get me wrong. There's value in working hard to achieve a win. I'm with everybody on that. I'm not giving up on all that. But there's a way we can incorporate the things that you and I are talking about as well.
Yeah. And I think there's multiple ways to hold a trophy over your head. There's lots of different ways. Yes. Mm. So, you know, as you know, we've been talking a little bit about individuals, but one of the best elements that I feel of mental coaching can be preventative things, can be preventative team activities. What kind of activities do you do off the court that kind of assist in this mental, in the mental health of your athletes?
So, we have we don't just have captains on our team. We have a couple, but we've also got a council. That's another group of kids who might not be as confident in enforcing part of our rules in the locker room or living up to some of the standards that a captain might have to. But man, they've got some good ideas, and some really good suggestions, and they care just as much. But I don't put the pressure on them by saying, well, you've got to be the kid to confront this in the locker room, because you might not have that skill and you might not want to do it. And then we've got a caretaker group, and that group just takes care of everything. They're the golden retrievers and just want everybody to get along. And you need all three of those things. To me, to have a good team, you need somebody to lead and be a captain and do some of the hard. You need somebody in the middle that's got some great ideas and willing to work. And, you know, I use bee colonies and ant colonies as, you know, you've got to have some workers and you've got to have some queens and you've got to have some laborers. So we try to give everybody a role that they're comfortable with, that I don't think stretches them into areas that can create some darkness. If you ask a kid who wants to be a caretaker to be a captain, you're just asking, that's going to be hard on them. It's going to be hard on you. Right. But people do it all the time. We name captains because they're a senior or something.
Well, and let me interrupt for just a quick second. One of the things that I'm hearing from you too is that you get to know your players. And this is something else. Coaches, if you're listening, please get to know your players so that you know who is that captain, who is that caretaker, who has the best role on this council. I think that's really important.
I ask them. I give them a sheet of paper that says, is this anything you're interested in doing? And then we get together and we sit down and we talk about it. You would be shocked. I was shocked. I had players I thought would come in and say they wanted to be a captain. So I don't want any part of that, coach. I just want to play ball and I'll be a caretaker and I've got some good ideas, but I don't want any part of that. So, it makes you a better coach. I think it makes you a better team. I think your players appreciate the fact that you're asking and seeking input rather than just making assignments. I'm not telling you I won't try to stretch a kid every now and then. If I got a kid on a fence that I think has captain's qualities, but I want to make sure we're there to support them as well. You can't just throw them in and name them that, but
right.
Get to know your players. It's there's always scary things in doing that. You know, everybody's like, well, we can't do this at my school. Or I can't do that. I can't see them off campus, or I can't see them without being in a big group. There's scary things involved, but there are ways. And, you know, if you'll share my email address at the end when we're done on your podcast, then people can reach out. We've got some things we've shared in the past, some things we do. But, you know, that's one of the things we do. There are a number of other things. But the main thing is on the back of my practice schedule, for me, this is just a little thing. And I've got every player's name written down. And there's three little boxes out beside their name. And I make sure I check three boxes every day that I've spoken to that player during practice about something not basketball related.
That's great.
Whether it's stretching lines, whether it's in a water break, it might be in the middle of a drill that they're not involved in, but I will consistently check. And there's days I look down and 10 minutes left in practice and I got five kids left to get to. But just checking in, just asking about something not basketball related, gives you a chance. It doesn't guarantee success, but it's going to give you a chance.
Mm-hmm. And it's definitely, in my opinion, a strategic component that I think can be a difference maker.
No question.
That trusting relationship, they don't second guess you. There's that could be a study right there. It really
agreed.
Could. It really could be. So, all right, I'm gonna pivot, if you will. You know, I know that you know we must help our athletes. They have to be in the forefront. But I don't think that we can really unless we take care of ourselves. And coaches are the absolute worst at sometimes looking at themselves because they have to be on point. They have to be the strong ones. I can take it. Give it to me. And I want you, if you don't mind, to kind of put yourself out just a little bit. What do you do to recharge? I know that, you know, you said earlier about finding healthy balance is difficult. Sometimes I, you know, watching film to me was a therapeutic release. Sometimes, you know, it doesn't have to be away from the sport, but how do you try to recharge and make sure you're at full tilt for your players?
I get away. I play guitar. I'm an avid movie watcher, Netflix. I'll binge watch whatever the hottest new thing is out, I'll pick a guitar up and learn 5 or 10 new songs. I mentioned Coach Vanderveer earlier. You know, I'd read an article about her and early in her career. She taught herself to play piano because she wanted to learn what it was like to be coached again and not be able to do something. She had no idea how to play piano. So you're taking coaching from somebody and you learn, well, man, if I coach my players the way this person's coaching me to teach the piano, I'm not a very good coach. So I took guitar and I taught myself on the internet with YouTube TVs and things. I'd encourage somebody to find something like that, that takes some time, that's hard, that you're not good at, that you have no expertise in whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And just see how, and it'll get you away. But no, I take a lot of time. I watch almost every show. Everybody's like, how do you find time? I said, well, I make the time.
Right.
And it's when I stop trying to find this balance. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that in the opening, but I don't feel like it's possible to be excellent, to have excellence in anything seeking full balance. You've got to be extraordinary to do a little bit, you know, extraordinary to do extraordinary things. So there's times tonight, you have to surround yourself with a family, my wife, my kids, that understand this is valuable. I'm going to miss the second half of the Chiefs game. Y'all watch it. I'll pick up pizza on the way home. She gets it. But you surround yourself with people like that. And then that when it's time to watch Yellowstone, we watch Yellowstone together and pick up a guitar and learn the new Chris Stapleton song or the new Tyler Childers song or whatever comes on the radio. You have to do those things. Otherwise, your players will sense it. Your players will get the sense that you're sitting here telling them that basketball and there's other things. If you're not showing them, if you're not only modeling it, but being a supermodel, you know, that my only chance of being a supermodel was to do things in a super way. It's not going to be because of the way my appearance, but be a supermodel of these things. I want my kids to know that I find out what they're watching and I'll watch something along with them. Yeah. Like if you'd have told me 10 years ago, I'd be watching All American so that I could have a conversation with my players, I would have said, no way I'm doing that. But that's one reason I do it, because I've got 4 players that were watching it. We get in our little huddle and say, oh, man, I can't believe Spencer got whatever on this episode. They're looking at me, and that's our thing, you know. Yeah. And I'm watching the Jeffrey Dahmer thing right now, which it makes me – I have to feel like a shower every time after I watch it. But I've got a player that she loves it. She wants to talk to me. Coach, are you current? Are you current? I'm not current, but I will get current so we can have this conversation. So do things that you like, you know, whether it's music or movies or walks or golf. Find you something that takes a little bit of time that you're not good at that will challenge you.
And you're humble exactly you.
Right. Coaches are the worst.
And humble you. You got to be humble. I think that's important, too. Sure. Yeah, you are picking up a new skill. I did not know you played the guitar, so I learned something about Coach Neighbors tonight.
I do, and I have a couple of bands I set in with on down here locally, and we've opened for some pretty big groups. I'm not the talent. I get in and get in where I fit in. I'm never going to be, but I love that escape. I love our players to come watch us because, you know, they don't – a lot of times they didn't know and they see in a different light. It's fun. It's scary. It's a completely, I don't mind coaching a basketball game in front of 10,000 people, but you walk up in front of 10 people at the local pub with 3 other people. It's scary, you know, and I get imposter syndrome and performance anxiety and perfectionism. And I know I hit a bad note and everybody goes, oh, you were great. And I go, no, I wasn't. I hit 5 bad notes. And so there are things that, yes, can humble you. And I would tell you that 99.9% of coaches need a little bit of humbling. All of us. We all need it.
Yes.
You know,
we do.
The saying, you're either humble or you're about to be, it goes a long way. I think we all, because of what you mentioned, we are in an arena where toughness is rewarded and you're the strong exterior a lot of times is valued, but man, I think over the course of the long run, seeing a little bit of vulnerability, I wish I'd have learned that a little bit younger, a little bit before I hit the age I am today.
Well, you can't have both. I mean, that is okay to have both.
Yep.
Sure.
You can.
So, but before we end, you know, at the very end of each of these podcasts, we're going to have a technique of the month, and we're going to talk about that. But if you had a takeaway that you could give our listeners for something that you do in the moment of those anxious moments to stay calm and focused and productive, is there any kind of breathing technique or visualization or anything that you do personally to help calm you?
There is. When you started bringing it up, I didn't initially know what it was, but the more you talked about it, it takes me back to my pawpaw neighbors. Anybody that know me for a long time has heard me make a pawpaw neighbors quote, but he used to talk about the visual of when the it hit the fan, you know, whatever, you know, fill in the blank there. When it hits the fan, the very first thing you got to do is unplug the fan. And, you know, because if not, it just keeps coming at you. It just keeps coming at you.
That's so very wise.
And I visualize it. It happened to us. I can send everybody. I've written this out into about a 10-page story of the day that he literally Mr. Miyagi'd us. This was a Karate Kid moment. But you've got to unplug the fan. And so anytime something reaches a level where anger, frustration, whatever it's going to be, I visualize, unplug the fan. And then the other thing he would say was, well, once you unplug the fan and you're covered, if you've ever stepped in a pile of cow manure, you learn you don't reach down with your hand and try to wipe it off right then, do you? You stop and you take those shoes off and you let them air out and you come back the next day and you just flick it off because it dries. And you forget about it, and it goes away, and it's not as smelly. So my visual is always, let's unplug the fan. Let's figure out why it hit the fan. Give it a little bit of time, and it'll be a lot easier to flake off than smear off. And that technique has got us through 95% of our crisis moments. There are some things that require an immediate reaction. I'm not going to tell you that that's not the case. There are extremes, and you have to deal with extremes. But most of the things are not extremes. We just think they are. Or they've been built up to be. So unplug the fan. Let your shoes dry off. Come back later. Maybe not the next day, but come back later. And then the last thing I would kind of, you know, kind of put a bow on all that is use the least intrusive form of correction as you possibly can. You know, don't, whatever the least form is, whatever that least level of correction is, that's what you need to use. You certainly don't need to meet a low level with a high level response. And that's where I see a lot of coaches. I've got a lot of coaching friends who have lost their jobs. And I look back at it and we all laugh and not laugh, but we all look at it and say, well, they overreacted. And more often than not, the time is going to be where you get help from others and you get an opportunity to really get more information, the best form of the information, and make sure there's no missing information. Read Annie Duke's books about decision making. If anybody has a hard time deciding how to decide, I think she's the best person out there on the planet right now, giving advice about how to go through that. I know the techniques she's given us have saved my job five or six times probably in the last 2 years. So there's techniques that'll help you. It still comes down to you making the decision and following through. But the more information you have, the more support you have, the better chance you have at being right more often than not.
That is fantastic. Now, how am I going to top those techniques?
Well, I think we just have to, there's other things out there. There's other people that have success with others, and I'm anxious to hear and listen to y'all's the future ones, because you don't get, just like everything else in basketball, you can't use everything that you hear. I can't run every great play I see in the WNBA or at FIBA basketball. You can't run them all. So you can't use all, but you're going to hear a technique that when that moment arises, it's going to trigger something in your brain, and you're going to go, oh yeah, I heard a podcast with Jenny and Coach X, Y, or Z that you have later on. I need to go back and listen to that real quick the only way that you can really expand your experiences is by talking to others. Mm-hmm. I'm only going to get to live the experiences that come up in my office. But I've got five friends that I talk to all the time. And when we talk through what they're going through, that expands exponentially my experiences, even though I'm not having to deal with the repercussions of them. So I just encourage people, whether or not they're able to use those techniques or the one you have on following this one or the one after that, listen to all the great ideas and then figure out, just like inbounds plays, which ones work for you, which ones fit your personality, which ones give you the best chance to succeed. Because again, we're not all going to always get it right, but the more we can help, the more we can save, the more we can impact, the better chance we have at filling successful in our jobs.
Right. And that's what mental coaching really is navigating and personalizing what techniques will work for each individual. I mean, if they can't see, you're going to fit them for glasses. You're going to get them hearing aids if they can't hear. But if it's a mental roadblock, you've got to go through several techniques before you find the ones that work. And that takes energy and effort, but every ounce of it is worth it.
There's no question. There's no question. And it's, we got to go back and find a way to measure that impact somehow. But
yes,
I think there are a lot of people out there that are just they're looking for help, and I think this is a great thing that y'all are doing. That's different. Like I said, anybody can watch and get inbounds plays, but this is a unique thing, and I applaud y'all for doing it.
Well, thank you, and thank you for taking the time to chat with us. We really do appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks so much. But feel free, my email address is coachneighbors@uark.edu. Be happy to share anything that we've ever written out, any books, anything we talk about, and also just like to hear anything that anybody ideas they have. We'd be happy to share back and forth as well.
Well, I know that, for years and years and years, your newsletter was a staple of a wonderful resource. And I know that you've got a lot of resources out there. Is there anything else you want coaches to know about?
Just, the newsletter, I got sued over it. So then that's why it stopped. there was an accidental sharing of some copyrighted information that I didn't have any idea was a thing, but it is. So we made it into a YouTube channel. So right. We don't do the newsletter anymore because I don't want to have to go through that again. But all of those coaches that were on it are on that YouTube channel now. My assistant coach, Pauline Love, does an amazing job with it. Just go to YouTube and type in Razorback WBB, and there's hundreds and hundreds of videos and links to our practices. And a lot of times we'll do a live practice just so people can get on there and watch. But we've gone to that YouTube channel. It's a safer way. There's no copyright issues. like I said, just sharing. Use that email. It takes me a few days sometimes to get back to people with emails. But I've so far returned every email that I've come across in my inbox since I started coaching. So I'll try to keep that streak alive the best I can.
That's fantastic. All right. Well, Coach, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Mike Neighbors, University of Arkansas women's basketball, being our very first guest on this podcast.
We want to thank Coach Mike Neighbors again for being our guest on Mental Coaching, sponsored by the National High School Basketball Coaches Association. Now, for your technique of the month, we're going to look at breathing techniques. There are a few breathing techniques that you can do to try to alleviate performance anxiety or to alleviate some kind of anxious feeling before a contest or before performance. Square breathing is one of the best techniques. It is a technique where you will inhale through your nose to a count of four, and then you will hold it for a count of four. Then you will exhale out of your mouth for a count of four, and then you will hold it for a count of four. It is square breathing because you can oftentimes draw a square either on paper or on your leg or in the air, whatever makes you comfortable. You can draw a square, one line on the inhale, and then on the hold, and then on the exhale, and then on the hold. This is a calming breathing technique that can help get you centered and relaxed before you take the court. Also, nostril breathing, to lay a finger on one side of your nose and close one of the nostrils. Take a deep breath in your nose, and at the top of your breath, get an extra sip, and then release it as you exhale through your mouth. Do that three different times on one side, and then switch to the other side. These two techniques are fantastic for pre-game preparation. These are techniques that can also assist you anytime during the contest and are relatively easy to perform. Breathing techniques are simple, they are quick, and we will continue with techniques every month during the podcast. We hope you have enjoyed the Mental Coaching Podcast, sponsored by the National High School Basketball Coaches Association. We wish you the best of luck, and until next time, we hope that you get better each and every day. And this is Jenny Hopkins. As I remind you, a coach's worth isn't found in their win and loss record or on their resume, but in the impact made on the game and in their players' lives.